Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network Saturday, March 18th, 2017. This is episode 1372. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/techguy. And by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality, you know, all that stuff. You know, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, anything you want to know, a little hand-holding on the information superhighway, that's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you could still call us. Just use Skype. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, probably should mention that. That's where we put everything that I mention and talk about and all the links and everything. That's TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And if you hear something, don't have to write it down. Just get on over there and details will follow. Let's see what's been going on this week in the tech news. Here's a surprising story, and I don't know what to make of this or whether this will go further, but it's a little concerning. You know, we talk all the time about privacy and how, you know, different companies like Google and Facebook are collecting information about you. That's, you know, their free services, and the way they monetize the free service is to collect information about you and then, sell ads based on that information. We also talk about government surveillance and how the government may be collecting a lot of information about people in an attempt to, you know, catch crooks. And there's some concern among civil libertarians that they gather too much or that it could be used against you. What if you combined the two? That's one of the things we learned from Edward Snowden, is that the government was using companies like Google and Yahoo and Facebook to get the information they knew about you. We take you now to Edina, Minnesota, where the Edina Police Department has asked a judge and been granted the right to see everybody in the city's Google history. I guess they're working on a case. It's not terrorism. It's not child pornography. It's just a case of wire fraud. A guy was trying to get, and didn't, by the way, get a fraudulent wire transfer of $28,500. Dollars. And so what they're trying to figure out is, I don't know what, but anyway, they know the name of the guy, according to the search warrant, Douglas blank, we won't say the last name. And what they've asked the judge to grant, and the judge agreed to, is that everybody in this suburb of Edina, that they could, you know, if we could just see what everybody had Googled, anybody who Googled that name, that would narrow our suspect list. You know, like somebody who is, because it's a fake name, somebody who's trying to get some fake documents or something. So last month, Judge Gary Larson, not the cartoonist, agreed and approved a search warrant that looks into, quote, any, all user or subscriber information of anyone in Edina who'd looked up that name between December 1st, 2016 and January 7th. And, of course, they immediately then filed a warrant with Google. We don't know what Google's response will be. I would hope they would say, huh? No. But it's more than just the day and time of the search for that Douglas blank. It's also, should include but is not limited to, according to the warrant, name, address, telephone number, date of birth, social security number, email address, payment information, account information, IP addresses, and MAC addresses of the person or persons who requested or completed the search. Whoa. I would guess that Google will go back to court, a higher court, and say, appeal this and say, no, because that's crazy. But there you go. Now I'm a little nervous because this is what we would be most worried about. We already have companies like Google and Facebook. And you're, by the way, we should point out your internet service provider. And in fact, the FBI has in years past gone to ISPs and said, could you just save everything that happens for 2 years just in case? And we'll let you know if we need it. In fact, some ISPs have put boxes, hardware, in their network centers to do that, to store everything. The FBI called this technology originally omnivore because it sucked up everything. And then they realized, well, that, you know, we don't want everything. We just want the meat. So they called it carnivore, which was even worse. And they renamed it to something innocuous and unmemorable. But many internet service providers, perhaps even your own, are already doing this. Not required to, but they seem to want to cooperate. Okay. Hey, who doesn't want to help law enforcement, right? And we know that the NSA has, you know, tapped into the lines coming out of Google and Yahoo and Facebook and snarfed up all that traffic again, you know, fishing expedition, which is kind of, this is what should make you nervous. Not that they're looking for a specific person, but they're just going to say, let's see what we get. Let's cast a wide net and see what we get. Maybe we'll find a crime. But this is the first time I've ever heard of a judge approving a search warrant saying, yeah, Google should give you everybody who searched for a particular term in this town. Wow. If this is upheld, this could be devastating. This would mean, I think we would all start looking at ways to anonymize our internet usage, right? I don't mind if Google puts ads on my page that are more relevant to the things I'm interested in. This being done automatically by machines and not humans, and that, you know, they got to make money, and that I can live with. But do you want a government that can just ask randomly, hey, who searched for this? Anybody in Boston search for the term pressure cooker in the weeks leading up to the Boston Marathon bombers? You know, that kind of thing. Kind of a surprise. I wouldn't expect a judge to say yes to this. We'll watch with interest. We will watch with interest. I love this. Apple price fixes. Everybody knows that, right? Go ahead and try to find an Apple product, an iPhone, at a lower price anywhere. Maybe $5 here or there. But you're not going to ever get it. You know, you can't go to a discount store. And Apple, that's called, you know, euphemistically, they have a very tight control of the supply chain. In other words, they tell retailers, you're going to sell this phone, you're going to sell it at our price, period. So apparently that's okay in the U.S., but it's not okay in Russia. The Russians have the Federal Anti-Monopoly Service has found Apple guilty of price fixing. Apple, they found, illegally ordered retailers to fix prices of the iPhone, 16 retailers. And if a retailer was found to be selling the iPhone at a, quote, unsuitable, end quote, that's Apple's word, price, Apple would order them to change the price or risk having the sales agreement terminated. We know Apple does that in the U.S. Is it legal? I don't, maybe not. It's not legal in, of all places, Russia, where plenty of other things are legal, including domestic violence, but apparently can't price fix the iPhone. Company has 3 months to file a challenge. And the worst case scenario is they pay 15% of the revenues in Russia to the government. Wow. That Putin knows how to run a country, right? The U.S. this week charged, by the way, speaking of Russia, you know, of course, the feds are investigating Russia for hacking Yahoo. And apparently three Russians and one Canadian have been charged for hacking into Yahoo. Not the election, but Yahoo. Of course, 500 million Yahoo users' records were snarfed up, released. Well, I'm glad they're doing something. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We can talk about that, but most likely, I suspect you want to talk about your computer woes, and that's what we're here for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. Look forward to this all week long. Hope you do too. I know who does not, but is here anyway because it's work. Heather Hammond, her sixth day of the week working. Phone ranger. Fun. My wife said, "Whatever happened to that nice girl who works with you on the radio show?" I said, "Heather?" She said, "Yes." I said, "She's here every week." I think maybe because you were on vacation.
I did skip a day once or twice.
She skipped a day. See, Mom, Heather's still here.
Oh, Mom. Oh, Mrs. Laporte.
Mrs. Laporte.
I thought you said wife. Did he say wife?
No, my wife knows you're here. It's my mom that doesn't know you're here. Okay. No, Lisa works with us, so Lisa knows. She sees you. Mom.
Mom, hi, Mom.
The other Mrs. Laporte.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, somebody's backing me up on the fact that you accidentally said wife, so.
Did I say wife?
That's a whole
They're
other
saying
issue
he
in
said
a different
wife.
Talk show.
No, my wife knows you're here because she works here, so she knows. We
yeah,
work together.
Yeah, you need to call Oprah.
Oprah. Okay, I apologize. Wife, Mom, I am confused. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
The reason Heather's here and kept in a soundproof booth is because she's answering the phones while we do the show. And she tells me when there's people who want to talk. Are there?
Oh, heck yeah.
I always, it's the worst nightmare that you come in here and you have to talk for 3 hours and no one calls.
Yeah, I just don't think that's going to happen.
No, thank goodness computers are not easy. And problems arise.
You chose a field with job security,
I did. What, I'm looking at the board. It's full. So who should I start with? I don't know.
Yeah, let's do Alex in L.A. He has a very charming reason he needs to know about video editing software.
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Laporte. Oh, no, you're not Mrs. Laporte. That's my mother. No, that's my wife. Oh, I'm so confused. Hello, Alex. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thanks for calling in.
I have a couple questions. One is that I have an old computer, which is Windows Vista, that starts supporting. So I need to change computer. I'm interested in Apple. That's one. Two, my 15th of my daughter's coming up in December.
Oh.
And I have videos and pictures, and I want to make a video of her for presentation.
For the quinceanera, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, how fun.
I have her when she started crawling and all that fun stuff.
So you're going to embarrass her in front of all of her friends.
That's correct, yeah.
Best reason for a quinceanera. All right, well, let's see here. So you're thinking of Mac, huh?
Correct.
The nice thing about the Mac is it has very, very good video editing software that comes with it. Windows does not. So you can do exactly what you want to do with a program called iMovie that comes with all Macintoshes. Do you want a desktop or a laptop?
We'll say desktop.
Okay. Then really you don't have much of a choice. I expect we're going to see new desktops from Apple in the next month or so, but there's no guarantee. And frankly, the current generation iMacs are perfect for what you want. The only reason some people might want to wait is because they'll have newer processors. They might have more power. More likely, the reason to wait would be because the old ones would get less expensive. Although Apple never really drops prices that much, so I would say an iMac would be a really good choice for you. That's their all-in-one desktop. They're not cheap. Apple's stuff is 50% to 100% more expensive than a comparable Windows device. And I wish I could say you get what you pay for, but a lot of that is you're paying for the brand, the Apple brand. However, it is the only place you can run a Mac OS, you know, computer. And they're, I think they're very good, especially for what you just described for video editing. They're very reliable. They're somewhat more secure than Windows. They're, not to say they're 100% secure. There are Apple viruses, and there's even ransomware on the Macintosh. But it's harder to do, and it's less, much less common. Most bad guys go after Windows machines because there's lots more of them. So I would say an iMac. You can, there's kind of two choices. You can save money and go with a 21-inch, which is a little small for a desktop computer. Or if price is no object, it is your daughter's 15th birthday. After all, a 27-inch is, and dad gets to use it then, is a really nice Macintosh. That's the, that's my desktop at home, and I really like it. So I would recommend an iMac if, you know, if the price is right. Now, one thing you can do to save a little money, I just did this, by the way, is go to Apple has an official outlet, a refurbished. If you Google refurbished Macintosh and you go to Apple.com for it, I can't remember, it's not visible in the store. You have to kind of find it. You'll save a few $100. And what you're getting mostly is computers that are brand new but just returned. Somebody bought it, didn't like it, didn't use it maybe, maybe used it once, and then put it back in the box and returned it. You get a full warranty. It's completely, it's identical to the new stuff, but a few $100 less. So I just did that because I finally got fed up, to be honest, with the new MacBook Pros, the touch bar. It's horrible. It's not useful, doesn't do anything useful. I kept waiting for software to come out to use it, and even with software that does use it, it's of limited use. It gets in the way. I keep hitting it by accident, launching, you know, little programs like Spotlight or the notification bar when I'm trying to just type. All in all, I hated it. So I decided to trade it in and get a – they also sell lesser-powered MacBooks without the touch bar. To get a 13-inch instead of a 15-inch because I want it a little bit smaller. And I'm very happy with that. It's got real function keys instead of that dopey touch bar. You lose Touch ID, the fingerprint reader. I admit, a bit of a loss. It's also not as powerful. You can get more powerful MacBook Pros. But at point being, I got it at the refurb store for about $300 less. And as far as I could tell, it is brand new. It's not been used. So I saved $300 and replaced the Touch Bar Mac with something that I really am much happier with. So people are saying that you can go to non-Apple stores like B&H and Adorama and get better deals or good deals on new Macs. That's fine. Those are well-known retailers, B&H Photo or Adorama. They're both photo, you know, primarily photography stores, but they're good retailers. You're not going to get a huge discount. Because, again, Apple tightly controls what we call the channels, the people who resell their stuff. So don't expect a huge discount. I think the best way to get a save money on a Mac is to get it from the Apple store in their, quote, special deals. They're refurbed. We'll put a link directly to that in the show notes at techilabs.com. Congratulations to your daughter. I think a new iMac is a wonderful thing to get for yourself. And I think you'd be very happy with it. Very, very happy with it. And by the way, perfect for what you want to do. The iMovie program, which comes with it, is easily the best free video editor on the market. And if you get proficient with it, Apple has an upgrade path to Final Cut Pro, which is used by many professionals, you know, movie editors and TV editors, and is an excellent tool. But I, you know, very few people really need all the power of Final Cut Pro. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Happy birthday to your daughter, Alex. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Scott Wilkinson is the host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG and editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and saw a Disney movie last night.
I did.
Actually, I really liked The Jungle Book. So Disney, I gather, is taking their classic animated films and creating live-action versions of them. With, yep. In the case of Jungle Book. It was just really one little boy actor on a green screen, and the entire movie was
else.
Computer.
Yeah. Yep,
but it's computer animated so well that it looks like real tigers and lions and bears.
That's
and all
right.
That.
That's right. And everyone was super impressed. I was, too, with the quality
really well
of
done.
The CGI
yeah.
on
yeah.
Jungle Book.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed that. So the next one is Beauty and the Beast. Now, this has a little bit more of a live-action cast, or no? Is it just the...
It does. No. It's got quite a bit of a live-action
okay.
cast.
Okay.
And, in fact, a lot of really good stars. Kevin Kline
oh, nice.
Playing Belle's father. Belle herself, Emma Watson, who made her name in the Harry Potter movies.
But obviously, dancing teacups and candles have to be animated.
and, in fact, even the Beast... is animated. It's what's called mocap, right? Motion capture. So the actor who played the Beast, whose name is escaping me at the moment, somebody in the chat room will remind me.
It's not Andy Serkis, is it? He seems to
no. It's not
the mocap king.
Gollum. He's the mocap king. Yeah. And this is a different guy, and he basically played in his skin tight lycra suit with all the dots all over it. So
oh, neat.
So people, against Emma Watson in her costume.
And she, Emma's live action, obviously.
Live action. Yeah, exactly. So they blended the two much more in a much more interesting way, I think. Well, I mean, Jungle Book was interesting, too, but it was just one kid, as you say, and then everything else was computer generated. Here, it was much more of a blend of the two. And I've read a few comments that say, oh, the CGI, the computer generated imagery of the Beast's face and the clocks and the candlesticks dancing around and so on, just wasn't as convincing.
Yeah, I've seen a number of reviews say that.
Yeah, as the Jungle Book. And I have to say that's probably true. But still in all, I thought that the Beast's face, some people are saying, oh, he wasn't very emotive and it was just dead and lifeless. I didn't think so. I thought his eyes in particular were really quite well done.
Interesting.
So, and that's where a lot of emotion comes from, is from the eyes.
Right. Well, that's why you get that, why they do those mocaps, right? So that they can make it an actor performing. You capture a performance, but if obviously you don't want to make up an actor. Well, you could make up an actor to be the
Beast. You could, but this would be so much prosthetic and makeup.
CGI is always going to be better than that, I would think.
Well, there are those who would disagree. I'm not one of them necessarily. It depends on how it's done. But
yeah.
there are those who say, oh, practical effects, that is, actually building things that look like you want them to look rather than generating them in a computer and integrating them in, is always going to be better. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Now, one thing I noticed in the trailer is that there's a lot of scenes in the castle that are very dark.
Yes. And this is why I recommend that people who go to see this movie go to a Dolby Cinema, of which there are, I think, close to 50 now in the U.S., including one in San Francisco. So all you folks up there in Northern California, at the Metreon, I believe it's called, right? Isn't there a big...
Yeah, Sony has... it used to be Sony, the Metreon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, now there's a Dolby Cinema in there. And the high dynamic range, which is really the difference between the darkest part and the lightest and the brightest part, in a Dolby Cinema, that range is much greater than it is in a traditional standard commercial cinema. And that really benefits this movie in particular because there are a lot of dark scenes. And when you have high dynamic range, you can see detail in the low light areas. You can see what's called shadow detail. So it's a very dark scene. It's out in the forest in the middle of the night or in the castle or whatever. In a conventional theater, a large
part... pools of black, right?
Exactly, or dark gray. You never see true black in a regular theater. It's the deepest black of a regular theater is always a gray. You can see that even in what are called the black interstitials, which are moments of full screen black between scenes. In those scenes, you can see where the screen is. You can see that it's dark gray. In a Dolby Cinema, it's black. The screen disappears 100%.
Sounds like you really should see it in a Dolby Cinema.
Oh, no question about
yeah.
it. No yeah. question about it. And I have to say, the Atmos soundtrack now is also wonderful. Atmos is another Dolby technology where they put sound not only around you horizontally, but also vertically overhead. There are actually speakers in the ceiling of the theater. You can do this at home, too, but when you go out to a theater, it's a much larger room. There are many more speakers. And they did a very interesting thing, I thought, in this movie. They brought the music, which, of course, is a primary element of this movie. It's a musical, right? So they brought the music out into the – when they mixed it, it wasn't only in front of you. It was all around you, the music.
That sounds great. I want to see this now. You made me want to see it. The funny thing is when we talk about home theater and we talk about the experience in the theater, we're not really talking about the quality of the movie. You know, as a movie, we're just saying, hey, but you got to see this because the blacks are really black and the surround sound is really good. Yeah. And was it a fun movie? I mean, we know the plot.
Yeah, the plot everybody knows. They actually they put in some new songs written by Alan Menken, who wrote the original songs of the 1991 animation.
Be Our Guest, and all that.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, Be Our Guest. Talk about a visual feast. What they did with Be Our Guest is really phenomenal. It just looks great.
Well, the movie's a huge success. I think it had an opening weekend of well over $100 million. So.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Despite the funky reviews, there have been a bunch of reviews I've read that have said, oh, it doesn't come close to the original animation. Well, I think it does. It's different, of course. And, you know, maybe if you like the animation, you're going to be loyal to that and think anything else is bad. But I thought that this pulled it off really well. And the music was great. There were a couple extra new songs, not by all.
Elton John?
Alan Menken.
Alan Menken, okay.
Alan Menken wrote the music, but Tim Rice, Elton John's lyricist,
right.
wrote the lyrics.
Right. Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter said, Beauty and the Beast, why live-action remakes can't truly replace cartoons.
I don't agree with that. I think the live-action remake worked very well.
Good, yeah. There's a lot of technology in there that's worth taking a look at.
Exactly.
I mean, I think part of this is what we're going to is a peek ahead at what ultimately I think will be the primary way of making films, mm-hmm. which is generating a good portion of the film in a computer. In fact, I doubt there are very many films coming out these days, and certainly not Hollywood blockbusters, that don't have a lot more CGI than you realize.
That's right, because CGI has become so good. I was marveling at the Beast, and we've seen this before, the individual hairs on his face and body. I mean, they move like hair, and they look like hair. I mean, it's what's called photorealistic.
It's amazing.
And it's amazing. It's really amazing.
And actors are worried, too, because, of course, now we're mo-capping actors' performances. A surprisingly large number of actors are actually doing this. I think they like the idea of immortality because movies, and, of course, it's great for their estate, their heirs, movies will continue to be made with actors they die.
That's right. That's right. You can still make a new movie with Humphrey Bogart.
I'd like to keep this show going for another couple of hundred years.
There you go.
Well, we'll get you and into the studio and mocap you, Scott, and the only problem somebody will have to write the content, but then you'll be able to say it because we'll have every vowel and consonant possible. Scott Wilkinson is at twit.tv/HTG for the Home Theater Geeks podcast. Yeah, I think it's really, really interesting as we move in that direction. I think in our lifetimes you're going to see.
I mean, we've already seen those commercials with Fred Astaire.
Yeah. Humphrey Bogart. And then more recently in Rogue One, Christopher Plummer.
Yep, exactly.
Was recreated, although not, by the way, very successfully. I haven't seen the movie, but the clips I've seen were not impressive.
Well, I was less bummed about it than a lot of people. A lot of people had the same comment. They said, oh, it didn't look at all real. It was so fake.
Right.
You know, maybe I'm more forgiving than many in these sorts of things, but I thought it looked fine. I mean, yeah, you could tell. And yes, the CGI in Beauty and the Beast maybe wasn't as good as Jungle Book. Why that would be, I don't know, because Disney did the Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's a puzzlement. Did they not have as much time or...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, I thought that the editing or the pacing of the movie, there were a couple of moments that I was like, what?
It was too slow?
No, too fast.
Too fast.
Too quick. It just
jumped. You know, kids today.
Yeah,
darn kids. MTV generation. You know, I guess we don't say that anymore, do we?
No, we don't. Now we're dating the next generation behind us.
They're in their 40s, the MTV generation.
The MTV generation. Right?
All right, I'll let you, you only have a little bit left. Can you stick around for the top?
Yeah, happy to.
All right, all yours.
Thank you very much. Let's see. Friendly Manitoba. You couldn't beat the CGI in Jurassic. Yeah, Jurassic Park was very good, obviously. And that was more than 10 years ago. No doubt about that. WP788, I don't remember the uproar when people thought they were going to recreate Carrie Fisher's Leah when she was alive. They did that in Rogue One. You know, she was alive when they did that, and she agreed to do it. Now the question is, what are they going to do in the next Star Wars movie? Are they going to recreate her now that she's gone? I don't know. Did she have a multi-deal contract with them and her estate must honor it? I don't know that either. Dean's line. What's MTV? Kawaii Guy is looking at a 55-inch Samsung QLED TV, which we just got some pricing on this week in terms of the list pricing. I'm looking at it. Do you have an opinion? I don't yet. My colleague Mark Henninger has a Q9, which is the flagship, in for review, and he just spent the whole day at Samsung a couple days ago looking at it. Interestingly, a review site called Artings.com recently reviewed the Q7 and got a very low peak luminance value, surprisingly low. And they thought it might be a defect. And Artings, like Consumer Reports, actually buys the products that they review. They don't get them from the manufacturer. So they went out and bought a second one, and they got basically the same result. And so my colleague and friend Mark Henninger went up to Samsung, and they did a bunch of tests up there. He did, rather, I should say. And it was independent. You know, it was at Samsung, so I have to say that. But you know, it wasn't Samsung saying, look at these numbers we got. He went and got the numbers himself, and they were quite a bit better than what Artings got. So we don't know what's going on there. There's something weird going on there, and we want to figure it out. I don't want to cast any stones or point any fingers. There's just something not jiving yet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. On we go with the phone calls. Kenny in Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Kenny.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Had a quick question on the OtterBox for the 7 Plus.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you ever heard of something called a rainbow effect on the screen of the...
Yeah, I don't... Yes. So the OtterBox is a case. It's one of the toughest cases. It's the one I make my daughter use when she has a smartphone, because otherwise, you know, and they kept it safe for a couple of years. So it was good. Of course, at some point she took the phone out of the OtterBox to clean it and dropped it immediately. So there you go. You need an OtterBox. I love them. Now, most OtterBoxes have a lid, but you may also get, and this is true with a lot of cases, a screen protector that you put over the glass of the screen. And that could give you a rainbow effect, depending on how well made it is and so forth. I don't put those on. I think they're of limited use. Mostly they would protect you against scratches. Modern smartphones, certainly the iPhone, the glass is very, very hard. The plastic screen will scratch, but probably not the iPhone itself. There are sapphire or glass covers too. OtterBox, I wouldn't be surprised if they include that. The idea being, well, if you drop the problem with any case is you have to keep the glass part of the phone free to use it. And if you happen to drop it at that moment on a sharp thing, well, glass is glass. Even Gorilla Glass is going to break if it's hit just right. But I never use those because I feel like they do impinge on the quality of the screen. So if that's what you're talking about, I would say, yeah, just avoid that. Is that what you're talking about, the screen cover?
I was talking about the regular OtterBox with the plastic. I guess it's like a three.
Yeah, take that out. Yeah, right. There's one that you don't attach to the screen. Yeah, that's just what the rainbow is. Is a polarization issue between the glass and the plastic, and it's acting like a prism. It's capturing light and splitting it. And yeah, I think that's annoying. But you don't have to use that plastic insert if you don't want to. There's a good reason to do it. in case you, you know, if you're really fumble fingered. But there's no perfect solution. I think the OtterBox, look, if you're going to drop the phone, most of the time it's going to hit the OtterBox, even if you don't have the cover closed on it, right? And the few times it'll hit the glass, then you might have a broken screen.
Now, do you know if the iPhone 7 Plus, do they use tougher glass than the 6?
Yeah, every app. So Apple doesn't say what they do, but yes, every generation is tougher. They don't admit it, but I'm pretty sure they use Corning's Gorilla Glass like every other manufacturer does. Apple doesn't mention the brand name of the glass process that they use. But we do know that the original iPhone used Gorilla Glass. In fact, Gorilla Glass exists because of the iPhone. Corning was about to shut that plant down. They couldn't find anybody to buy this special tough glass they were making until Apple came along and said, we'll take about 800,000 of those. And Corning was back in business, and they've since improved that almost every generation. You know, I don't know what they're at now, Gorilla Glass 4 or 5, but they're better and better. There's always this problem. I mean, you know, it's a materials science problem where the harder something is, the more brittle it is. So you want to make a glass that doesn't scratch. That's the primary problem, right? If you could use glass screens on phones, that would not shatter, but then it would scratch. So you want to you're trying to balance the need to not have a scratch surface, because the worst thing on a phone, I mean, the worst thing obviously is breaking it, but the second worst thing is scratches on it. Makes it really, but most modern phones, and certainly the iPhone 7, I've never scratched it. I do not keep my iPhone 7 in a case. I carry it every day. Now, I don't drop my phones, rarely drop my phones, but I don't like cases, because here's the most beautiful phone ever made, the iPhone 7. I mean, it really is gorgeous, and I got the shiny jet black one. It's beautiful. It's a work of art. And it bugs the heck out of me. They make these beautiful phones and everybody immediately pops them into what is basically an ugly plastic case. So I don't use those. I take the chance. But I do recommend OtterBoxes. I think they're very good. And yeah, try it. And if you don't have to use that plastic insert. Well, I would get one if you're really worried, with a lid. Because most of the time you're going to drop it because it fell out of your pocket or whatever. And so if it has a lid on the top, it's going to protect it. So if that's something you're really worried about, cases will generally protect everything but the glass. And then if you get one that has a closure, it's going to protect the glass. Except that, you know, there's always a vulnerable moment. You're using the phone and then you go, whoopsie-daisy, and you drop it. And it just happens to fall face down on a sharp rock. Well, I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. There's a trade-off for protecting your phone. And if you drop them a lot, if you break them a lot, sounds like you have. Sounds like at least you broke an iPhone 6. Getting a case is a good idea. It is harder, however. Susan, you're Belinda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a problem with my Wi-Fi.
Yes.
I got a Blu-ray for Christmas.
Yay.
Hooked it up to my television.
Yep.
Got on, found my network.
Good.
On Netflix for about 3 minutes, and then I got a no signal. And I have not been able to find my network since.
You don't even see it.
I don't even see it. I've gone through Ad Network and had it searched that way, and it keeps coming up that it can't be found. The message on my television is to power my network off and on again.
Yeah. It doesn't know. So is your Wi-Fi access point near the Blu-ray player or the TV?
It's in my bedroom. The television's in the living room, but I can pick up my Wi-Fi and my laptop in the living room and my iPad in the living room.
Yeah, but remember, though, sometimes your laptop might have a better antenna. So it might be that you can receive it with some things, but not all things. The TV antenna isn't that good. Ideally, frankly, you'd want to have a hard wire for a television, because Wi-Fi isn't ideal for things like streaming Netflix. I wish you could somehow, and I don't know how you could, move your access point nearer just to see if that's the issue. Is the access point multi-channel? Does it do more? Do you know more than 2.4 gigahertz? Does it also do 5? It might be that your TV only does 2.4 and it can't pick up the 5 gigahertz. But most likely, I hate to say it, your TV's Wi-Fi isn't working. But I would, the first thing, I'd guess the easiest thing to try is see if you can get a signal closer by. Maybe use your phone as a hotspot and put it right next to the TV. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on, don't go away.
Sure.
I had to break for the ads, but I can still talk to you. So okay. So it's the Blu-ray or the TV? Which is it?
It's the Blu-ray I got because the television didn't have, it wasn't a smart TV, so I got a Blu-ray.
So it's the Blu-ray player.
Right.
Right. And does the Blu-ray see other Wi-Fi signals?
It does.
Okay, so that means its Wi-Fi is working. It may be those other signals are confusing it, that they're, you know, this is one of the biggest.
Well, let me ask you this. When I tell it to search for my Wi-Fi, which is Netgear, it comes up and shows a MAC address, and that is not my Wi-Fi's MAC address, and I can't figure out how to get it to change that MAC address.
Well, that means it's some other access point it's seeing.
I see.
And that would probably, do you have a Roku?
I do not.
Any other sometimes, you know, all sorts of things use Wi-Fi, and I suspect it's getting swamped. In other words, one thing you could try is taking the Blu-ray player closer to the Wi-Fi access point and see if it works better.
Okay.
This is in a completely common problem these days because all your neighbors now have Wi-Fi.
Exactly. And we're all pretty close. We're like a 4-unit condo.
So it may be that it's saying, well, the strongest signals are over here, and just ignoring your Wi-Fi. Okay. This is why these Wi-Fi, mesh Wi-Fi routers are becoming more and more popular, because of this universal problem that Wi-Fi just doesn't work very well. Before you assume anything, I would just see if you have a phone that can do hotspotting, use it, and just see if you can get the Blu-ray player to see a Wi-Fi access point, join it, and do what it needs to do.
Okay, just as a test.
Just as a test. It sounds like, because you're seeing other access points, that's not the problem. So it's a couple possibilities. One, that your Wi-Fi is too far away and it's so weak that the Blu-ray isn't seeing it. Or that it's on a channel that is getting swamped by somebody else's Wi-Fi. Your neighbors, probably to solve this problem, powered a lot of Wi-Fi up, right? And they're just swamping you.
Yeah.
All of these things are solved nowadays. People go out and buy. I don't want you to run out and buy an expensive thing, but they go out and buy mesh Wi-Fi routers like the Eero or the Orbi I mean, there are a lot of different routers designed to solve this. How old is that Netgear?
The Netgear's not old at all. Maybe less than a year.
Okay, that's good.
I wouldn't even say. Yeah, I'd say about 6 to 8 months.
Yeah. And you haven't done any
so
weird.
It has nothing to do. It has nothing to do with mine. Like, I've tried inputting the IP settings on my own, and that's not going to fix anything.
None of that's useful. You should be. The only thing you ever really should do is look. You know, scan. See your Wi-Fi, join it, enter the password, right, and it should all work.
Yeah, and that's why it's so weird that I got onto it for, like I said, about 3 minutes. I watched something on Netflix, and then it was out.
Yeah, probably your neighbors.
They came online.
Yep.
Or they got into their Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's ideally, you know, you're closer to your Wi-Fi. That's the problem, unfortunately. But don't you have a cable box near your TV?
I do.
Is your Wi-Fi...
The cable box is AT&T, and my Wi-Fi is Spectrum.
Ah.
Does that have anything to do with it?
No. I was just hoping that because you're getting TV from somebody, that you would get your internet from the same company, which means you could put the router next to your TV. But if it's two different companies, your Spectrum's in the other room, in other words.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you can't get it to come out the other place. You didn't turn on any security features like MAC address filtering or anything.
No, huh?
No.
Because like I said, it worked just fine. I found my network the first time, got right into it, just like you said, worked great, fantastic, then boom, no signal. And I, every once in a while, I go, okay, I'm going to sit down and try this again.
I know, it's frustrating, isn't it?
this morning I was listening to your show and I go, you know what, I'm just going to give it a shot.
Yeah.
if it's
Shoot.
Obvious to everybody but me.
It isn't. It's bad Wi-Fi. It's universal. And what most people are doing to solve that is they're getting these Wi-Fi systems that have little satellites in every room. There are other ways to solve this. You could do power line networking from your Spectrum router through your grid to put a hard wire next to your TV. That would fix it as well.
Okay. And would I call Spectrum for that then?
No, you could do it yourself. You just go out and get some power line networking. It's inexpensive. You can go on Amazon or it's just okay. Power line networking. What you do is you get two units. I use one from TP-Link. They're very inexpensive.
Okay.
You get one unit that's next to the Spectrum box, and it plugs into the Spectrum box.
Okay.
And then you get the other unit plugs, and both plug into the wall. And they, so you plug it into the Spectrum box and the wall, and then the other unit is by your TV plugged into the plug there, and it has a wire coming out of it that you can lead to the Blu-ray.
Okay,
and
great.
It's like having a wired connection. It's not quite as fast, but it's going to be better than this Wi-Fi setup.
Okay. Well, yeah, anything's better than nothing.
Right. Right.
Okay, great. Well, that gives me something to
There's something you can do.
Try.
Is the Does the AT&T thing have Wi-Fi? No.
What do you mean?
The router you got from AT&T or the cable TV thing, from make sure that they're not putting out Wi-Fi, too. That could be jamming it.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it does.
Yeah.
It's just their cable box.
Yeah. Try power line networking. At least that's an inexpensive solution.
All right, I'll check it out right now.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Bye-bye. Sorry, Scott. All yours now.
Hey, that's fine. I was only paying half attention to what you were talking about there, but it seemed kind of related to what I do.
Yeah, sort of. It's really just about bad Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Which is ubiquitous these days.
Which is why I always say, if you're going to stream Netflix or, you know, stuff
hard
to your home theater,
hardwire. She had the situation where her cable, her data router, cable modem router, was in another room.
Mm.
It was kind of a weird situation because usually you get TV and cable TV and data from the same company, but she had two different companies. So
okay.
So
well, you know, I've taken a long Ethernet cable. My router's in a different room from the theater, and I just. You know,
yeah, wired is always the best.
I just ran a wire along the baseboards. It was long, but
yeah,
did the trick.
Yep.
Anyway, so I only have 90 seconds left, folks. KL1681, the screen on my Samsung Blu-ray home theater system changes inputs on its own. Well, the screen wouldn't be on the home theater system. It would be on the TV, but I'm assuming the home theater system changes inputs on its own. Do you know why or how to fix it? Samsung was no help. I'm sorry, I don't. That sounds like a pretty bad thing. Are you sure you're not like sitting on the remote or the dog's chewing on it? Or, I know those are silly, but I can't think of any reason why it would just change inputs on its own. That sounds like a defect to me.
My mom's TV randomly goes to sleep. I asked her the same question. Are you sitting on the remote, Mom? And then I had her, you know, make sure the timers were, you know, sleep timer was turned off. Mm. And it is. That's weird. I don't know what's going on.
It's weird. I can't imagine what's going on.
I think maybe it's resetting. It's doing some, it's like, it's old. Anyway, I sent her a new Tickle TCL TV because they have Roku built in.
Yeah. Ah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Tickle. I had never heard them referred to that way. TCL. Yeah.
TCL.
Yeah. They, you know, they're pretty good for what they are.
She's old. She's sorry, Mom, but she's not. She doesn't care about.
She does. Yeah. She doesn't have the
it'll
high quality
fine.
Standard.
It'll,
yeah,
look, it'll fine.
Look fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. I have to take it away from you, my friend.
That's fine. Thank you so much.
Have a great one.
See you next week.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking about computers. We're talking about the internet, televisions, internet wired televisions, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that stuff. Normally, our travel guru, Johnny Jett, would join us around this time, but he will be here tomorrow. He's speaking at, I think he's in Chicago, did he say, or Denver, for the travel show. He's speaking today, right about now, in fact, but he will join us tomorrow. On the show. 8888-ASK. Leo, that just means more time for me to talk to you. I talked a little more with our caller last hour. I get more and more calls about Wi-Fi problems these days. And it's because everybody and their brothers using Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi was great when it was just you. But if you can open up, you know, your computer or your TV and, you know, scan and see, you know, several different Wi-Fi access points, your neighbors and so forth. I live kind of in the country, and I still can see four or five. Because you know what happened? When this first started happening, people built Wi-Fi access points. They turned them up, in effect. And the analogy, and I credit Jim Salter at Ars Technica for this, is a great analogy, is you're in a bar. When you first get to the bar, it's just you and the person, and you can talk to each other. You can even talk quietly, and you can hear each other. But the bar starts filling up, and there are a lot of other people talking, just like you're a lot of other people on Wi-Fi. And so you start talking louder. But, of course, as you talk louder, so do the other people. And everybody pretty soon is shouting, and nobody can hear anybody, and that's what's going on. We got more and more powerful routers. And we started using something called MIMO, multiple in, multiple out, multiple antennas, multiple channels. And your neighbor, you know, very likely to solve his or her Wi-Fi access problems, started buying a router that wasn't very neighborly, frankly. Some of these routers from a couple of years ago would just take over all the spectrum in the neighborhood. It's like a radio station put its 50,000-watt tower in your backyard. And it just was a mess. So, unfortunately, we've got to find a better solution, a better way around this. And the good news is there are more channels than there used to be. We started with Wi-Fi in the 2.4 gigahertz range, and there were 11 channels within that, but effectively really just three, because each channel would take over a couple of side channels. So there were kind of three usable bands in this 2.4 gigahertz. And so if it was just you and your neighbor, you could figure it out. You'd be on channel 11, he'd be on channel 1, everything would be fine. But then you got five neighbors. And in fact, one of the best things to do is to get a Wi-Fi analyzer. You can get one on Mac or PC. Unfortunately, you can't use one on an iPhone. I use one on Android called a Wi-Fi analyzer. What it does is it lets you see all the Wi-Fi in your neighborhood, which channels they're on, how strong they are graphically, and you can see if you're getting swamped. Then we added a couple more channels. We added actually three more 5 gigahertz channels, and that's been a big improvement because in most cases, not all three are used. The other thing that's great about 5 gigahertz is it doesn't travel as far. Now, you might say, but I want it to travel far. I want it to get through my house. Well, yeah, but what's great is your neighbors doesn't get into your house. So that's been the big change is your neighbor, if they start moving to 5 gigahertz, or even if they don't, that 5 gigahertz band inside your house is going to be relatively clear because 5 gigahertz, it's a higher frequency, doesn't get through walls, right? So now what you want to find is a router that can work at 5 gigahertz, and almost always that's better. Except that, like our caller, if your router is in one room and your TV or your computer's in another, the room where the Wi-Fi is great. 5 gigahertz is great, but it's maybe not getting through those walls. Remember, 5 gigahertz doesn't go through walls as well. And so that's the truth is, this whole mesh thing, really, that's all it is. What you're getting is multiple units, each of which works best with this kind of narrow 5 gigahertz band that doesn't get outside the room, but you're in the room with it, right? And then they talk to one another either at a lower band or some other way, but they manage to have a back channel so they can all have, you know, internet available in a way that doesn't interfere with you. And your neighbors don't interfere with it. And that's really what's going on with these mesh units. So when you buy a mesh unit now, whether it's Eero, oh, there's so many of them. Google Wi-Fi has one. There's one called the Plume. There's one called the Luma. there are quite a few of these. Linksys has just made one of their own. There's Amplify. There's a dozen maybe different manufacturers. But they have one thing in common. You buy more than one unit. You'll buy a base station that, just like your router used to, connects to your internet connection. But then the base station has satellites that you spread out around the house. And the truth of these is that really the reason they work is they'll almost always switch you over to 5 gigahertz. And you're in your own personal pool of Wi-Fi. You don't see the neighbors. You don't get, you know, crosstalk from the neighbors. And this is a good thing with Wi-Fi too because, and I don't know if people are aware of this, but when you're using Wi-Fi, and it's really bad for streaming video because Wi-Fi is polite. if it sees somebody else's Wi-Fi, it'll turn off and say, okay, you go for a little period of time, and then we'll turn back on at a random period of time. They avoid collisions by taking turns. Taking turns is fine if you're surfing the internet or downloading email. It's terrible if you're listening to this show or watching Netflix, because it means for a period of time you're not getting any data. That's why Netflix buffers, but that buffer will slowly shrink every time this happens, and eventually Netflix will pause. Have you ever seen that? And it'll rebuffer, and 10, 15, 30 seconds later, it'll start up again. That's what's happening. There's crosstalk coming from other people, usually your neighbors. And your Wi-Fi's, as it's designed to do, being polite, saying, okay, you talk, now I'll talk. You talk, now I'll talk. But those pauses are death to streaming video. So we need 5 gigahertz really solves this, which is much more, you wouldn't think, but it's true, much more limited range Wi-Fi. You want little puddles of Wi-Fi that are all yours. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Randy in Lake Forest, California is next. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Leo. I used to listen a long time ago, but I kind of moved, and then now I'm back in the same area. So just today's the first time I've heard you.
Well, welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you. This is a very good show.
Thank you, Randy.
Yeah, I like that first caller. I have an Apple, but I've gone through the Windows units. I've gone through at least 5 of them. I got by the top of the line, the best I can get, and they never last for more than like 3.5 or 4 years for me. And I got this, it's a ISX or OSX or something.
Yeah, OS 10, yeah.
And
they call it Mac OS now because nobody pronounced it right.
Oh, okay. So
they eliminated the X. It's just Mac OS.
Okay. And anyway, that shows you how old it is because it came with Snow Leopard.
That's pretty old. Yeah, yeah.
Apple will not work on those units anymore.
Yeah.
And this is part of my problem. I had El Capitan operating system put in. The most recent that I could get that would make it work. And anyway, so I got an infection somehow of malware. And I stayed up all night one night and I was playing around with it. And I found it. I deleted it. It had some kind of an emblem on it. And it said malware such and such on it. And then I created a bunch of files. I got rid of all of those. But since then, I haven't been able to log on. El Capitan.
Yeah. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to restart, right? Get your data off if you can. I don't know if you have data on there. But what you need to do at this point is erase the hard drive and start over. You can recover a lost password, and it's the same process. You shut the machine down, turn it on, holding Command and R. You're going to go to recovery mode. There is a reset password there, but I would rather have you erase the hard drive and reinstall the operating system. It's the safest. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my lunch. Blue Apron. I love the Blue Apron. We've got a couple of Blue Apron meals in the fridge. That's one of the nice things about Blue Apron is I know I'm going to go home to something delicious that I'm going to make. There's nothing like having a freshly made meal prepared by yourself. I tried, the frozen stuff. It's not you want to do the cooking. And it's fun. What if imagine this. You had all the ingredients plus a recipe card for an incredible meal. You can do it yourself. Easy. Nothing's, magic. If you can follow a recipe, you can do it. In 40 minutes, you're going to have an amazing meal. The house is going to smell incredible. And everybody's going to say, wow, you cooked this? Yeah, I cooked that. That's what Blue Apron is all about. They deliver seasonal recipes plus all the fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Less than $10 per person. In fact, it's grocery stores about 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. Because Blue Apron doesn't have all the overhead of a grocery store. They just give you great ingredients. And it is fresh. Even the meat and fish are always fresh, never frozen. Delicious stuff. the highest quality ingredients, over 150 local farms and fisheries and ranchers across the U.S. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Great ingredients, the kind you would buy. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental United States. There's no weekly commitment. You get deliveries only when you want them. And you can choose from their menus. In fact, go to the menu section and see what's on the menu this week. Oh, look at this. Top Chef spiced rubbed pork with sweet red onion and black beans. Oh, man. Chicken meatballs and fregola sarda with kale and Sicilian tomato sauce. You pick what you want. They even have vegetarian plans like green garlic pesto pasta with butter lettuce salad and creamy lettuce dressing. By the way, it's so fun because once you cook, you'll be using new ingredients, unusual recipes. But once you cook them, you'll know how to cook them again. So it really broadens your repertoire. Here's the menu this week. Check it out. Get three meals free. By the way, they have plans for couples and family plans with kid-friendly ingredients. Get your first three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/techguy. I was just checking. We got our first Blue Apron box 2 years ago. We've been using Blue Apron for 2 years, and it's just been fabulous. I have ingredients now in my cupboard that I got because of Blue Apron that I never had tried, and now I know. Unusual forms of kale and bok choy and, things like farro that I'd never tried before. I love it. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals for you and your loved ones with Blue Apron. BlueApron.com/techguy. BlueApron.com/techguy. Don't eat out tonight. Say, hey, let's have a Blue Apron night. BlueApron.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Jillian, or is it Gillian in Charlottetown?
Gillian.
Hi, Gillian. Beautiful Prince Edward Island.
Hi.
Welcome.
I'm just calling because I've been having a problem with my history on Google Chrome and now also on Mozilla Firefox. About a month ago, I had Google Chrome open, and for some random reason, it closed. And when I tried to restore my session, all my history was gone.
Uh-oh.
And my boyfriend is kind of techie, so he tried to find a way to find it again, couldn't. So I just kind of had to start from scratch for that history.
If it happens to Chrome and then it happens to Firefox, either your boyfriend's sneaking in and erasing the history.
Probably not.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes, how can I put this? People, use the computer, surf around in some places they don't want anybody to see. Maybe they erase the history. But if that's not the case, then it may also be that if the fact that it happened to both browsers indicates to me either the first situation or the second, which is that your hard drive itself is getting a little flaky. And what's happening, in order to save the history, Chrome and Firefox both have to write to the drive. Maybe those areas of the drive are a little bit corrupted. The easiest thing to do in both cases is reset your browser. Start from scratch. And that would be pretty straightforward in both. The commands would be a little bit different. It's easy in Firefox. Firefox actually has a command to reset. I don't remember if Chrome does. I think it doesn't. But what that does is it refreshes it. It puts it. It says, okay, start over. Erase everything and start over. And that would kind of be like you erased the program and uninstalled it and reinstalled it. In fact, that's the next thing to do. If you can't find, I'm trying to remember if there's a way to reset Chrome. I don't think there's a menu command. It's easy in Firefox. Try it in Firefox first. See if this fixes it. I have to admit, though, it's a little bit suspicious. Let's see, reset Chrome. Just looking on Google if there's a way to do that. Oh, yeah, it does. Okay, click the menu button. That's those three, we call them a hamburger menu, the three horizontal lines in the upper right-hand corner. And then in settings, select settings. But you have to start typing reset settings in the search box, and then it will find it magically for you, okay? So when you get to the settings, there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner. And if you search for reset, there it is. There's a restore settings to their original defaults. I had never seen that before. It must be kind of a hidden setting. So you press that, that's going to erase everything and start over. If it continues to happen, well, it shouldn't. It could be, I guess, that your hard drive has a problem if it's an older computer. There may also be settings in Firefox and Chrome. I think there is in Firefox to automatically start over. Make sure you're not working in incognito mode. I'm puzzled. I can't think of a reason why that would happen in both Chrome and Firefox unless there's human intervention or you have a hard drive problem. Anyway, try resetting it and see what happens. See if that fixes it. Jesse in Yorba Linda, California. I suspect the boyfriend. Jesse in Yorba Linda, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jesse.
How's it going, Leo? Long-time listener.
Thank you.
Quick question. You know, when you save PDFs on your desktop and it has a PDF at like three different computers, and one of them I changed the settings, I guess, on Google, and that comes up with the Google icon. And I'm just curious. I know that sometimes they say through PDF or Acrobat that sometimes they carry some malicious...
No, I don't think that's... Yeah, could.
Yeah.
So you're saying that the PDFs have the Chrome icon?
Right, on the desktop.
Instead of the PDF icon.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's possible that you... here's what might have happened, that you opened the PDFs. Google has a PDF reader built into Google Drive. So it's possible that when you opened those, Google Drive said, oh, I can read that, and associated itself with the PDF. And that, you know, because otherwise it'll have the Adobe, it'll have whatever your PDF reader is as its icon. There's no default PDF icon. It's going to have the icon of whatever program's assigned to it. My suspicion is Google, you know, Chrome just said, oh, yeah, you, I can open this, and I will. So if you want a different icon, then you can also, you know, open it in Acrobat. Or you can also, this is, I don't recommend this. In other words, don't worry, it's not malware.
Oh, okay.
If it doesn't bother you, I just ignore it. What happens when you double-click the PDF? Does it open the browser?
No, it just opens up that PDF file, but when I go through...
But it opens it up in what? In what application?
Windows 10.
Yeah, but what application...
My Windows 7 is still PDF. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but in Windows 10, it's a Chrome.
Right, now it's coming up. It was coming up under Edge first, but it was always opening up the Edge browser and then my PDF file in there.
Yeah,
I needed to print it. I printed it out.
Yeah, the file association got changed. That's all. There is a database of file associations. If you really, really hated this, you could go into and you could say, hey, from now on, open it up in Chrome. I think Windows 10 gives you, I have to look, but it gives you an easier way to do that. And then say, I want it to open up in whatever you use, Adobe Reader. And it'll then adapt. It might take a while because the icons are cached, but eventually we'll adopt the icon of whatever program is responsible for opening it. You can also, Keith's reminding me, okay, this is the easiest way to do it. Right-click the PDF, and then you could tell it, open this with something else, like Adobe Reader, whatever you want it to open with, and then it will do that from now on. And eventually, once the cache gets kind of refreshed, it'll show you a different icon. In other words, nothing to worry about. The chat room's also reminding me that there is a setting in Chrome, and I know there's one in Firefox, that says erase the history... delete private data when Chrome is closed. So it may be that in Chrome you have that setting. Who turned that on to automatically erase private data when Chrome is closed? So we'll put a link in the show notes to an article that explains how to turn that off if you want your history to still be there. Vic in Glendale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Vic.
Hi, Leo. How are you? Great show.
I'm well. How are you?
Okay. I'm kind of at my wit's end and was trying to find somebody who can help me on this, and I think you're my last resort.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Okay. I'll be your Obi-Wan.
My son committed suicide. He was 28 years old.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
6 months.
So sorry.
Yeah, he was two electives away from graduating law school, and we lost him.
Depression is a terrible, terrible thing. I'm so sorry.
It's awful. We're trying to get as much information on it as we can. We were able to get into his laptop, but I'm having a heck of a time trying to get into his cell phone.
Okay, hang on a second. I'm going to help you. I do have to break, but don't go anywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, this is an interesting issue in general. What I do, and it's too late, obviously, for your son, but for other people listening, what I do is, because I know at some point it's going to happen to me, is I use a program called LastPass, and they have a emergency access feature that you can share with other family members, and you could say, if anything happens to me and you need to get into my account, this is going to happen to all of us, right? Our accounts are going to be locked. Because only we have in our heads these passwords. So I share my entire password list with my loved ones, and they have they can only access it if I give them it's a weird setup. It's like, but basically if something happens to me, they send an email to LastPass, and LastPass they actually click a box, and LastPass says, okay, we're going to email Leo. If he doesn't respond in a preset period of time, we're going to let you in. In other words, giving me the chance to say, no, wait a minute, I'm still here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's a clever idea. Unfortunately, obviously, it's too late for you. I'm glad you were able to get into his computer, because that means you probably were able to get most of what you want. The cell phone is, how is the cell phone secured?
He's got the pattern where you run your fingers on the on the numerical.
Yeah.
But we've had the Glendale Police Department take a look at it. He was a police officer also with the Glendale.
Oh,
Police
my. Department. Oh, my.
And, he was just a total winner all the way around, an overachiever, I think. And I think that's what did him in.
Sure. But, I'm sure he suffered from depression. And, it gets to the point there where you just think there's no way out. And it's a horrible thing. And I'm so sorry.
Thank you. The forensics at the Glendale Police Department also said that if we try too many times, it'll erase what...
It could. This is one of the features. Depends on, how security-minded he is. The good news is the unlock pattern is not the most secure way to lock an Android phone. There is a setting with Android and iOS where you say if somebody tries 10 times and fails, erase this phone.
Right.
So you're there. You don't know if he had that on. But
I don't know. We didn't know there was anything wrong with him. I mean, the last day he was just talking about the future and how great it was going to be when he graduated.
I'm so sorry.
And just 6 months later, he was gone.
My son. The worst thing.
Absolutely. No indication. So I've just kept it on off, trying to and just hoping for. And I've gone downtown to the main office of AT&T and. Various other people just asking see if somebody can hack into it. I hate to use that word, but at this point, that's all I got.
Yeah. So, no, you will have to hack it. And, of course, all of these phones are designed not to make that too easy.
Right.
I'm just looking.
But it is possible, correct?
Well, I believe it is possible.
I'm just now it's going to take finding the right person to do it.
And I'm just looking here at what it looks like there are recovery modes.
Uh-huh.
There's something called the Aroma File Manager. We'll put a link in. You know what we're going to do is at techguylabs.com, I'm going to compile some possible solutions. So you'll in the next few days refer back to your call on Tech Guy Labs.
Oh, wonderful.
But I'm going to post a link there to an article, and there are a number of other articles that possibly could help you. This is the Aroma File Manager. Will it looks like be able to bypass the pattern?
Oh,
and get to the tools. There's also a thing that Google distributes called ADB, which might be able to do that. So I'm going to put a link. It's from safetricks.org in the show notes. I've just pasted it into. It might take a couple of days to get there, but these are things that you can try. And we're going to ask the listeners to help us too. So keep listening, okay?
Oh, Dan, I sure will.
I'm so sorry, my friend. I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Thanks.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, gave a little help to Vic. We were talking to Vic. He has lost his son, and his son's cell phone is locked with a pattern lock. Android even tells you when you use the pattern lock that this is not one of the most secure ways to lock an Android phone. The most secure way is with a long password. Most people don't do that because you don't want to have to enter a password every time. So the pattern lock is kind of in between. It gives you some security. It discourages the casual snoop, but it's easy to use. And there's always a trade-off between convenience and security. So the pattern, where you actually draw a pattern on the screen, is one of the most convenient, but not the most secure. So I found on the web an article that has a couple of ways to get into an Android device that is locked with the pattern. Vic quite rightly was concerned that if you just kind of try patterns randomly, it's possible that his son had set it up so that after 10 failed tries, the phone erases itself. A lot of people do that. That makes it much more secure because people can't just guess away. You know, at some point, it's just going to say, yeah, you guessed too many times. I've got a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com. We'll put it up there. I think James is on vacation, who normally writes this down, so it probably won't get up there till Monday, but we'll put it in there. I did put it in the chat room. And any help the chat room could give us as well would be appreciated. But it looks like there is a third-party kind of hacking app called Aroma that will help you get access to the password file. Let me make sure this is up to date because, you know, Google is always trying to lock these things down as time goes by. Yeah, this article is from this month, or February 1st anyway, last month. So I think still up to date for the latest versions of Android. So Aroma is an app that apparently will help you delete the password file, and then you can use any pattern to unlock it. There is also a way to do it apparently with the Android software development kit. This would be kind of an approved way from Google, and they describe it using ADB commands. So I guess that the pattern lock is not definitive. But and of course, there's always the ability to erase the phone and reuse it, but we don't want to do that. We want to try to save the data on the phone. There might be pictures on there and things to be shared. And then I think this is an important lesson for all of us. We're all going to go sometime, and you've probably locked a lot of information that maybe your loved ones would like access to. For instance, you might want to, you know, if you pass away, your Facebook account, you might want to have that memorialized. Facebook will do that and say, Leo's not with us anymore, but if you'd like to leave a memorial comment, you can do so. Passwords, you know, I have what I do, and I think it's a good idea. LastPass will allow you to. And I imagine other password vaults will do this. I keep all my passwords in a program called LastPass, a password vault, and it has an emergency access feature that allows designated loved ones. I've designated my wife and my daughter as designated loved ones. And by the way, I had them do the same so that if I pass away, when I pass away, they can request access to the vault. And it's got what we call a dead man switch, which is poorly named, but it works. You set it up. You say, if I don't respond after 3 days to their request, unlock it for them because that means I'm gone. And it gives me 3 days if I'm not gone. And let's say my wife just wants to see my passwords. I can say, hey, no, don't give her access. So LastPass is a very good way to do it. You could also, and we've talked about this before, I mean, you really need to be thinking about this. You could perhaps give your LastPass password to your attorney. Or if you don't want your attorney to have access, give half of it to your attorney, half of it to your executor or your spouse, and say, my attorney has the other half. If anything should happen to me, get together and you'll have the full password. So they're you know, this is an issue that's going to become more and more, come up more and more, isn't it? Very sad story. But we should probably all be thinking about what happens, you know, what happens to my estate? I have bank accounts, I have savings accounts, I have investment accounts that only I have access to, unless I make plans for somebody to be able to access that. 8888 ask Leo. Thank you, Vic, for your call, and sorry, very, very sorry for your loss. I hope that helps. We'll put the details at techguylabs.com. Corey in Panama City, Florida. Hello, Corey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well, Corey. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'd just like to thank you real quick for being a mainstay in my life for more than half of it now.
Oh, you're so kind.
And I've been listening to you since I was 14 years old.
Holy cow. And you're 43 now, and that's, no, I'm just kidding. It's fun, though. If you do this long enough, and I have been doing it a long time, you start to meet people who grew up listening to you. Oh, my God.
Well,
goodness.
I'm one of them.
Thank you. That's nice.
I love it. So I've got a unique one for you. You may not be able to help me off the top of your head. Maybe the chat room or somebody listening can provide me with an answer here. I'm a gamer. I'm a bit of a techie myself. So I've got a gaming mouse. It's a Corsair M95.
Nice. Yep. I use the Razer myself, but those are great. They make a big difference, okay. Don't they?
They do. They do. Yeah. And this one's great. I love it. Fits my hand just right.
Good.
Now, the problem I've got with it is the driver software that comes with it. You know, you download it, you install it, and then you can create profiles for all of the buttons on the side to be assigned to a macro or to a keystroke or whatever it is. At some point in the past, I put those side buttons to be set to different buttons, basically keystrokes.
You reassign them. And yeah.
Yeah. Now they're stuck.
Oh, no.
I have uninstalled the drivers completely, reinstalled them. I've gone so far as I got some other new hardware, completely reinstalled Windows, brought the same mouse, installed it and everything. From a completely previous installation of Windows, it still has the main button that I use. Is
it must be stored in firmware in the mouse, right? It survived. Right. Yeah, it must be in the firmware.
I cannot get the mouse to accept new firmware.
Uh-oh.
I'm completely at a loss.
Well, you pulled the battery, right, and let it die.
It's a wired mouse.
It's wired.
I prefer wired.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah. You're right. Of course. It's gaming. What game do you play?
Counter-Strike, mostly.
Nice. Yeah, so fast twitch, but it's fast twitch, right? You got to move fast.
Yeah. And
so
that presents another issue I'm having with it. I don't know if it's a software or driver issue. Every 2 or 3 minutes or so, it will completely stop responding for about a second or two.
Well, you need a new mouse, my friend. Yeah. That's not in Counter-Strike. You don't want to be frozen for a second. You're gone. Your history. Yeah. So
where I'm at.
It might be time for a new mouse. Okay, so it's wired, but it's saving those settings. There's no. Is there a reset button on the mouse?
Not that I can tell.
How interesting. And when you try to change it in the Corsair software, you can't.
I can change it. The software will display whatever changes I make to it.
But it doesn't save.
The mouse still, it doesn't save to the mouse. Yeah.
Sounds like it got fried somehow.
Yeah.
So the firmware, so obviously the settings are stored in the mouse, which means it has probably a EEPROM, electrically erasable programmable read-only memory. Because it can't be battery, it can't be battery backed up. It can't be, you know, some sort of volatile battery backed up. It's got to be some sort of non-volatile memory that can be written to.
Okay.
So it's an EEPROM, and I guess it failed. You know, let me see. We've got chat room is coming up with a possible solution here.
Okay. Yeah, if I could flash it to the original firmware.
Well, that's what you want to do is reset that mouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they. I don't know if there's a way to reset the Corsair mouse. Let me look for it and see if we can find it for you. But it may be that erasable memory finally bit it, and it's time. It sounds like it's time for a new mouse. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm looking at a Tom's Hardware article. Corsair M95. Which Corsair is it?
The M95.
All right.
I believe it's discontinued.
Yeah. Yeah. There needs to be a reset.
I downloaded the drivers from the Corsair website and tried that. I can't seem to find a way to just force a firmware reset on
it. And which tells, well, you shouldn't need to. It tells me that it's broken. It's not. It saved them, but it can't be. Right. It can't be erased and restarted, or changed. Yep. And I think that has to be merely that it's worn out. EE prompts can only be written to a certain number of times, and it must have just worn out. That's a very strange thing. And I don't see anywhere on here a way to kind of reset the mouse. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. How to reset? No. Firmware update issue. No. Yeah. I think it's time for a new mouse.
Well, I've kind of had gotten there. You were help me, Obi-Wan.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. The chat room is great on this stuff. They're pulling up a bunch of stuff, but I don't see anything that. Is it possible to reset to original factory settings? There's no button on it that lets you reset it physical?
Not that I have. Yeah. I hadn't really looked, to be honest with you, and I'm not at my house right now, but I can check
and see. There might be a little tiny hole that you can stick a paper clip in.
Yeah,
will reset it.
I will check that. I hadn't.
That's the one. That's the one. In some I'm looking. It's not this. It's not the. It's not your mouse, but there is some Corsair hardware that does have a physical reset button.
Okay. I will check that, and I'll check back on the show notes and things.
All right. Hey, appreciate it. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks for listening all these years. Take care, Corey.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Now the chat room is just going off on what's the best gaming mouse, and there's a lot of choices. There's as many choices as there are gamers, I think. And what I didn't realize is how expensive these can be. I thought, $100, right? That M95, that Corsair, was $200. For a mouse. That's how serious people are about gaming, right? Very, very serious. 8888 Ask Leo. We do another show called the New Screensavers. I'm going to do it this afternoon. And I think we have a guest on who plays a game called No Man's Sky, which I've played a little bit. It's not my cup of tea exactly. It's an interesting game. It got a lot of press attention when it was released last year because it is an almost infinite universe with billions of planets generated computationally. And while you are apparently in a, on a network where there are other players, there's so many planets you never run into anybody. I don't know anybody's ever run into anybody. But each planet is unique because it's computationally generated with different flora, fauna, different ways to play the game. So you just fly around from planet to planet and you gather stuff. Oh, not just planets, there's moons too. Anyway, this guy likes this game so much. He's so, so serious about it that he went out and spent $4,000 on a new super-duper computer with multiple screens just to play it. That's serious. And I thought buying $300 worth of donuts in The Sims or The Simpsons mobile game was crazy. 88. No, I didn't do that. Just somebody I know, a friend, did that. Nick in Moreno Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. How are you, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Good, good. I just moved in with some family, and they do not have a wireless.
How dare they?
Exactly.
What are they? What is this? What are you, savages? No Wi-Fi? So do you want to be a good guy and get them some Wi-Fi?
Well, I think I'm only going to be there seasonally, but I'm looking for a printer.
Ah.
So that I can print occasionally, maybe 7 to 10 pages a week or so. And I'm looking for a recommendation for a printer. It could be wireless. I might have wireless later.
Yeah, but I mean, you want one that's going to be USB. The good news is most printers that do wireless printing will also have a USB connection, so you can do local printing as well. As you know, Epson's a sponsor, and while they are a sponsor and they give me money to recommend them, I happen to like them a lot, and that's pretty much what I use. They have a wide range of printers. They're very good. I guess some of this comes down to what you want to do. You said 7 or 8 pages a week. That's very light printing. Now, do you ever do photos or color?
No, I do use color, but no photos, just for printing text.
Okay. So, you know, if you did a lot of printing and the cost per page are important, a laser printer is often a good choice. But it sounds like for light printing duty like this, an inexpensive inkjet would work great. And frankly, there are a lot of companies that make excellent inkjets, including HP, Canon, Lexmark, and Epson. And I would say that any of those would be just fine. My personal favorite is an Epson. If you want to do photo printing, I'd get an Epson Artisan. I don't think you need one of the fancy Epson EcoTanks. You just don't do enough printing to make that sensible. So you could probably go out and just get a if color, how is color important or not? You said you do some color.
Sometimes I like to highlight text, make it red or blue. That's about it.
That's about it. Yeah, you know, I'm very happy with my Epson printers. I have no problem recommending them, even though, as you hear, they are a sponsor. I think they're just fantastic. Let me think of my next, I guess if it's not Epson, it would be Canon. Canon is better, is a really good photo printer, but boy, I'm just a fan of the Epsons. It's hard for me to recommend anything else.
Right. I was just basically going to go to Amazon, look for something.
Yeah. You could buy it by price. Exactly. Remember that the reason that these printers are so inexpensive, the $100 printers, is because they're going to make it up in the ink. But you do so little printing, it's not a big deal. Right?
Yeah. Okay, right.
Yeah. HP also makes excellent printers. I have mixed feelings about them because, just lately they put in... They made it impossible to use anything but HP cartridges in their printers and things. I don't know. It's hard for me to say anything but Epson, to be honest with you. And not just because they're an advertiser. Even if they weren't, I would be saying the same thing. They make a printer for every possible use or per purchase. A lot of people in this chat room are saying you should get laser. The problem is laser, when you get color, it's going to get a little bit more expensive. And laser really makes more sense in a situation where you're doing a lot of printing. It's definitely the lowest cost per page. But, I just think an inkjet's probably the best solution. $100, why not? Jim in Las Vegas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Hey, great. I'm blind, and I've been building up my library of skills, and I'm having trouble finding a skill that will allow me to dictate and send an email, or even better yet, just record an email and send it. Do you know any skill that could accomplish this?
I know how to do text messages. Let me see. Oh, yeah, apparently you can now do Gmail.
Good.
Is Gmail good for you?
Perfect.
Okay. But what it's going to take is a little extra work with if this then that. Do you know about if this then that?
No.
If this then that is a free website, ifttt.com, that works with the Amazon Echo to get it to do even more things. So,
Great. Yeah,
in fact, it's well worth looking. First of all, the amazing thing about the Echo, and the reason I understand why you're asking, there are now more than 10,000 skills, and it's kind of hard to find a skill you want. You can use the, I don't know how it is when you're blind, actually, it might even be impossible. The way I do it is I use the Echo app on my phone, and then there's a skills section with 10,000 skills, and you can look by category, you can search, but it's tricky to do that. So, I would say we'll put an article in the show notes that'll explain how to do this. But you can use what you'll do is you'll trigger an if this then that action. So if this then that is exactly as it sounds. If this then that, and one of the thises can be a command from an Amazon Echo, and one of the thats can be then send it as Gmail.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have to enable the if this then that skill.
Right.
In the Amazon Echo. Really worth doing. If this then that is great. And then there's a recipe on if this then that for sending someone a short email via voice through the Echo. And you do it through, believe it or not, the to-do list. And this is there is no direct way that I know of to send an email. But what you're going to do is you're going to, well, for instance, a sample would be Echo, add I am running late to my to-do list. You're limited to, you know, maybe 40 words. You can't go on and on and on, but it's good for short emails. And then if this then that is scanning your to-do list and says, oh, here's an item, let's email this. Uh-huh. Now, the problem is, of course, that do you have many recipients?
No, I don't. A handful.
Yeah. So you're going to, you know, this the way this is set up, you don't get to specify the recipient. It's in the if this then that recipe. So you might have to figure out some hack. This is an interesting challenge.
Yeah.
I think the reason part of this is that Amazon doesn't allow long speeches.
Right.
So while you could, for instance, use a Google Assistant to do this, you could send an email to Lisa saying, I'll be home in a few minutes, period. Could you please stop and pick up Michael, period. Signed, Leo. You could do that on a Google Assistant. You could do that with the Google Home. But Echo, for some reason, I think doesn't want these longer things. I think it doesn't want to send long speeches.
Yeah, right now I'm using a transcription service called TalkScribe from Line One Communications, where yeah. I call.
Do you have a smartphone? Because
no, I don't.
Yeah, this is this kind of thing the smartphone does very well.
Yeah,
Amazon's got to be considering a way to do this because right. this is an obvious use, right?
Because I think the Facebook posting also is an issue.
Yeah, because it will only take a few words.
Right.
So. You've got to think Amazon's thinking about this and how it could do it. For somebody who's blind, having a voice assistant, the more it can do, the better, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these things are a boon. I can only imagine how great it is. And we just got, you know, it's getting there. It's only 2 years old.
Let me ask you. Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one. The Kindle Fire.
Hold on just a second. I got to take a break, but don't go anywhere. I'll talk to you off the air. We're going to be back with more right after news from your local stations. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. Sorry about that, Jim.
No problem.
We're still on in the podcast. There's still people listening. It's just not part of the radio show.
My other question is the Kindle Fire will allow you now to have Kindle books narrated.
Right.
Now, is that on the Echo yet, or is it? I'm sure it'll be a plant, maybe it planned. I don't know.
That's a good question. I use audiobooks from Audible on my Echo all the time. And so any audiobook you purchase, and that's different from the robotic narration of the Kindle. That's a human reading it.
Right. I've got that.
But you want to have the robotic, you know, I sounds familiar. Seems to me you can. Let me think. Kindle, read, Echo. That sounds familiar. I read these Echo emails every week. And yes. With Kindle books by A Word, I'll call her Echo, you can ask Echo to read eligible Kindle books in your library. So if it's purchased from the Kindle store or borrowed from the Kindle's owner's lending library or Kindle Unlimited, here's the command. Listen to a Kindle book title. But it has to be in your Kindle library.
Terrific.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's amazing.
What a boon, you know? We're entering some very interesting times.
Yeah, thank you so much, Leo. How do I access the article you mentioned?
Which, the one about if this then that?
Yes.
It's on The Verge. And if you Google, what did I Google to find it? The article came out a couple of years ago. Alexis voice assistant now works with Twitter, Gmail, and Evernote, but it is a it's if this then that recipe. So search for The Verge and Amazon Alexa and email or Gmail, and I think you should be able to find it pretty quickly.
Thanks so much, Leo.
Appreciate my pleasure.
Take care.
You too. I mean, what an amazing thing to have, huh? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that stuff with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., or Canada. Let's move to Lakeview, Ohio. That's where Norman hangs his hat. Hi, Norman.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I wanted to ask you some questions about Chromebooks. I heard you say a few things about it a couple of weeks ago.
I'm a fan.
I'm not always close to the radio on a Saturday, so today I happened to be on it, and I thought, I want to give you a call find out. I'm up in my 70s and technology challenged like most people my age, and you seem to make it sound like the Chromebooks would simplify your life a little bit.
Yeah, the reason I like Chromebooks, if you asked me, what computer should I get 10 years ago, I didn't have many choices for you. It was a Mac or a PC, right? Mm-hmm. And, you could do laptop or desktop, but those were the two dominant operating systems, and that was that. But they're both what we call general purpose operating systems. And the problem with a general purpose operating system is, it can do anything. You just have to have the right software for it. But it also, is overly complex as a result. In order to make an operating system that can design rocket ships and edit video and, record audio and everything under the sun, you have to make a very sophisticated machine. And over time, Windows now has hundreds of millions of lines of code. It's become an incredibly complex beast. Add to that their age and the fact that both Mac and Windows were designed kind of in a hacker era. So security has been an afterthought for them. They're really more than most people need. I would guess you and 99% of most computing, you probably do a couple of things. You surf the internet. You want a browser. You have an email system. Probably you can use a browser to access that email. Those are the kinds of things. Maybe an occasional game of solitaire. Is there anything else that you want to do? Do you have photo albums you'd like to edit? Things like that?
Yeah, well, my wife's got a tablet, and she takes a lot of pictures with it, and she can send them to my laptop.
Yeah, they work fine in a Chromebook. Chromebooks don't have a lot of storage. The negatives on a Chromebook is the idea is you have a little bit of storage locally, but mostly you're doing everything on servers on the internet. Mostly Google's servers, because Google makes the operating system, the Chromebook. So you're going to use Google Drive to store your photos, Google Photos to edit and organize your photos. If you want a word processor, you'll use Google Docs, although Microsoft has a very competent Office suite that works fine on a Chromebook. For most of what people do, a Chromebook is much more secure. It is basically bulletproof in that regard. It's simpler. You don't have to, worry about all the things that can cause problems on a Windows machine. But most of those things are the things that give you more capabilities. So if, Chromebook isn't great if you've got a big hard drive you want to access, or, there's just things you can't do with a Chromebook. If where you live has full-time internet, and where you go generally does, and nowadays that's true for almost everybody, a Chromebook is a lot less expensive, a lot simpler, and a lot more secure. The good news is Chromebooks, are mostly well under $500. In fact, there are a good number of Chromebooks that are $200 or $300.
Mm-hmm. With a Chromebook, can you get a big screen like you can with a laptop?
Yeah, so one of the things you can do, no, not in the laptop versions of Chromebooks, but one of the things that Chrome OS is the operating system. They also sell Chrome boxes and Chrome sticks. So the Chrome boxes are like, little, computers that you would then hook up to a big monitor, and they can run big monitors. So you could have a desktop Chrome OS machine running a Chromebox. The Chrome sticks plug into a TV. You could have a 70-inch screen if you want. Yeah. So it really depends on how you want to do it. I would suggest going down to an electronics store, a Best Buy or the like, and saying, you know, I want to take a look at the Chromebooks and see how you feel about them. You like a big screen?
Well, I think I got a screen now with my last Windows. I think it's 24-inch. It's a pretty good size.
Yeah, you won't get a Chromebook with a 24-inch screen, but you can get Chrome boxes that will hook up to 24-inch screens.
Oh, well, that would be okay then.
Yeah, then it becomes a desktop with a keyboard and a mouse, and just like a normal computer, except it doesn't have all that complexity.
And you say you can play games on it.
Absolutely.
Spider and that.
You bet.
My wife likes to do that.
Anything. So one way to kind of test this out is say, hey, honey, just use Chrome for a while, the Google Chrome browser, and see what you can do with that. Look in the Chrome store for apps and extensions. Modern Chromebooks also support Android games. So anything you can play on an Android phone, you can play on them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. But you want to make sure you get one that supports the Play, they call it the Play Store, because then you can do more than just, you know, card games. But yeah, for most people, the kind of gaming they do, you can do almost any kind of gaming on a Chromebook. It's not a high-end gaming machine that people would want to play, you know, Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty
we're not
on.
Into that.
Yeah, you don't need that.
We're not into that.
I didn't think so.
But she likes to play Spider, and she's got me playing it a little
perfect
bit.
Perfect for solitaire, yeah. And because you have Android, you have all the card games that Android has, which is, you know, a huge number.
Android. Okay.
So you want, if you're going to get a Chromebox, make sure you may need to get a touch screen. Generally speaking, you know, that's the stuff that comes out this year. All the 2017 Chromebooks support Android. When you go to the store, say, hey, I want one that supports Android. And I'm not sure I don't know what the situation is with Chromeboxes. I think those are all the Chromebooks. One of the nice things, though, that many of these do, the Asus, Acer, and I think the Dell, all and Lenovo, all are two-in-ones. It'll fold over, and they'll be like a tablet. But then if you want, you can open up the keyboard, and you'll have a keyboard as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my wife's got a keyboard for her tablet.
Yeah. It's very similar to that, really. They call them two-in-ones or convertibles is more likely. And that's, so you can get convertibles as well. So there's somebody saying, and I think he might be right, that the Chrome boxes probably don't support Android because you'd need a touch screen for that. So I'm thinking you probably want to maybe see if you can live with... They have 14 inches, I think, is the biggest Chromebook you can get. It's not huge. Uh-huh. It's like a laptop.
Oh, okay.
But it can turn into a 14-inch tablet, which is big for a tablet. It's bigger than your wife's tablet, I'm sure.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think everybody should at least consider these. You know, the default was automatic before you get a Windows box. And you hear, if you listen to the show at all, you hear people call all the time saying, oh, I've got a virus, my Windows won't boot, I have all sorts. Windows, because it's general purpose and much, much, much more complex, is much more difficult to run. You almost have to be an expert these days to keep Windows running reliably.
Yeah, Windows is a pain in the neck, really.
Okay, yes. I don't want to say that, but yes.
I have friends that have an Apple computer, and they don't. It's 4 or 5 years old, and they have no virus protection on it, and they have
You don't. It's much safer on a Mac, absolutely. But even Macs are general purpose computers, and so are more complicated.
Uh-huh. Well, that's what I was thinking of next, but then I listened to you talk about the Chrome, and I thought...
I think for you, it's a Mac or a Chromebook, and you should look at both. But you'll save a lot of money buying a Chromebook.
Yeah, sounds like that's my cup of tea.
Good. Give it a try.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, let me know how you like it, because I've been recommending these in general, unless you have, you know, you might have somebody around who's an IT expert who can come over and, you know, help you out and is glad to help you out and show you how to use things. Or you become an IT expert. But those are your two choices with a Windows machine. You need one or the other. Not so much with a Chromebook. Still a little bit with a Mac, but less so. And with the Chromebook, not at all. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take more of your calls. Help you buy equipment, sell equipment, abuse equipment. That's what I do. Stay tuned. All You like magazines? I like magazines. Who doesn't like magazines, right? Magazines are awesome. Some of the best journalism, the best writing is still being done in The New Yorker, the best photojournalism in National Geographic. You keep up on politics in The Atlantic or The New Republic. This is the best thing. I love magazines. But what I don't love about magazines is the clutter, all those magazines on my coffee table, the expense. I mean, how many magazines can you subscribe to? And the guilt. I used to get the paper version of The New Yorker, and I always felt guilty that I didn't read it cover to cover every week. Then along came Texture, saved my life. Whatever it is you're interested in, artificial intelligence, self-driving cars, wireless electricity, politics, journalism, investigative journalism, domestic and international news, you can find it all at Texture. Over 200 of the best magazines. The full edition. I mean, everything you get on the newsstand, including the ads, everything. It's kind of like Netflix for magazines, for $9.99 a month. And by the way, you may be buying it for, Vanity Fair or The Atlantic or Architectural Digest, but you're still going to get all the others, Consumer Reports and Popular Science and even stuff that, I read because I'm in the business, but I don't want to subscribe to Variety or Ad Age or Billboard, but I get those too. I get the gossip magazines. I don't even want to get caught buying People magazine, but I've got it in my Texture. Texture's awesome. The app works on your tablet, on your phone. You can have 5 devices with 1 Texture account. One of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. And it's entirely digital, so it's good for the environment. And it's good for you. It eliminates the clutter. And, boy, they've got so much stuff. Plus, because it's digital, you can search text. You can mark what you like. You can auto-download your favorites. So when you get on a plane, even if you're not online, you can read anything. I just love it. Normally $9.99 a month for 200 magazines. Right now, you could try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. Texture, TEXTURE.com/twit. This is so awesome. Anytime I get on an airplane, I bring my iPad with me and I just have it loaded up with all these great magazines. It's so much fun. Sports Illustrated, Golf Digest, all the fashion magazines. Texture.com/twit. And by the way, if you like photography, they've got a ton of photography magazines, and including, of course, National Geographic. And the photography is much better than it would be in print, right? That's that, popular photography too, and outdoor photography, because instead of screening these, onto print, where you really reduce the quality, you're going to get a digital copy of the photographs. They look much better. Texture.com/twit. Try it free today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Somebody in the chat room trying to get Linux working on their Dell computer, having trouble with the Wi-Fi. The good news about Dell, if you want to use Linux, I mentioned the big operating systems, Windows and Mac, but you use Linux all the time. In fact, Chrome OS is based on Linux. Android is based on Linux. Many of the devices you use, if you drive an electric car, my Tesla is based on Linux. Your television might be based on Linux. And, more than half of all the websites you visit are running this operating system, this free open operating system called Linux. It's everywhere. And one of the reasons I like using Linux on Dell computers is because Dell had some employees a couple of years ago who said, we want to make sure that we don't just support Windows, that Dell computers support Linux. They created something called Project Sputnik. And pretty much out of the box, most Dell computers work great on Linux. They have the drivers kind of built in. And Dell even sells now Dell computers, laptop computers, the XPS 13. I think they sell some Precision computers as well with Linux installed, which saves you $100. You don't have to pay the Windows tax, and it works great. So if you're trying to get Linux working on a laptop, a little Googling around, and you should be able to do that, and especially if it's a Dell laptop. It's gotten easier and easier. Chris on the line from Agua Dulce, California. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing well. So here's my dilemma. We live in a rural area, and nobody can bundle for us.
We currently have DirecTV as our cable provider.
Uh-huh.
And we're paying north of $150 a month.
Yikes.
You know, and you got to buy these packages and you watch maybe 10% of the channels.
They got you. I tell you, it's not just satellite cable guys, same thing.
Right.
They got you because you can't just get Game of Thrones.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
You have to get everything.
And so I've been looking at more and more going to an internet-based providing system.
We call it cord cutting.
Exactly.
You're not really cutting the cord because often it's the cable company that provides you with internet access.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's you feel better about it. You don't feel like you're buying a lot of stuff you don't need.
And that's my point is, you know, right now we have the lowest level of internet that we could because of the cost.
Do you get your internet from DirecTV?
No. We get our internet from... Used to be Time Warner, now Spectrum.
Okay. So you do have a cable internet connection.
Correct.
Yeah, that should be plenty fast enough to do anything you want to do. I watch 4K movies on my internet access. So
we have their lowest service at 2 megabytes per second.
Yeah, you're going to need more than that.
And that was one of my questions. What, for streaming, what would be a sufficient amount?
Well, if you want HD 1080p, you should have at least 15 megabits down.
Okay.
15 to 20. If you want to go to UHD 4K, you'll need 5050.
Okay.
The good, you know, if you look at the pricing, though, here's what's happened. Spectrum, which is a cable television company, Comcast, Cox, and all the rest, realize that people like you are going to stop buying premium channels from them. They're going to stop buying TV access from them, and they're just going to buy internet access. So they've slowly ratcheted up the cost of internet access so that they don't lose any money. So you may not have to pay quite as much. $150 is a lot.
Right.
But you know what? When all comes down to it, you'll probably be spending $60 for your internet access.
Right.
And then you're going to add, if you want HBO, that's another $10. Showtime's another $8. If you want, you know, it'll get to be close to $100. It'll be the same.
Okay.
But you'll have the satisfaction of knowing you're buying what you want, no more, and you're kind of sticking it to the man.
And that's really what it is. I mean, so many, like, the cable channels.
The bundles.
Yeah. I watch, like, one or two of those.
Yeah, they get you on the bundles. The best, you know, the best cord cutting, there are now at least four good cord cutting bundles. Sling provides one, Sling TV. There's one from AT&T. My favorite is the PlayStation View. Take a look at that because you're going to include that in your cost. Remember, you're going to have your internet cost. Plus, in many areas, you can get live locals, ESPN, CNN, and even some special, like Showtime, some special premium channels for a pretty good price. So look at PlayStation View.
Okay. One that I have been looking at is the SkyStream One.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any information or feedback on that.
Let me look at it before I comment, because a lot of these are actually pirates. So let me make sure that this is not a pirate solution. If you're not paying, for instance, if you're getting HBO shows and you're not paying a monthly fee to HBO, you're not getting... Yeah, I'm looking at this. So, yeah, this is an Android TV box. The live sporting events are not Major League Baseball and the NBA.
And that doesn't concern me. I don't watch any of that stuff.
You know, notice they say live sporting events, but what you're going to get is soccer from Bahrain.
Right.
You know, you're going to get whatever's streaming on the internet. If it's not pirate, that's what you're going to get. But, you know, what you'll also get... is because it's Android TV, is, you know, there's Vudu and Amazon, Netflix, all of these things. So, yeah, this looks fine. I'll tell you my favorite I would prefer over this. It's about the same price, although it's probably very similar, is the NVIDIA Shield Android TV device. Shield. And that's because it's from a bigger company, NVIDIA. And it also does some great stuff. It's a really remarkable a television device.
Okay.
And you can also play games on it. It's got a good... It's a little more expensive. It's $199, not $149.
Yeah, and the one I was actually looking at is their one with the Air Mouse, which I think is $170. They have one that's $195, which comes with an OTA, but I don't think I'm going to pick up any signals where I'm at.
No, yeah. So I don't know this particular device, this Skybox, but it's an Android TV box. There's quite a few of them. Okay. And Android TV is fine. I mean, I'll tell you, the one you really should get, and it's not expensive, is a Roku, at least to start. The Android TV is similar in terms of the channels it offers, and it's a full Android operating system, so you could play Android games on it. You could do more with it. Generally, if people ask me what streaming box to get, I say Roku because it's $100. But if you're willing to spend a little bit more, I would look at the NVIDIA Shield. At least compare it to the Skybox.
Okay. And one other question is, do I need to get a box per TV, or is there a way to split between TVs?
Yeah, you pretty much need a box per TV.
That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you could. You'd have to cobble together an HDMI splitter, and you'd have to switch. It wouldn't be worth it.
Gotcha.
It really wouldn't be worth it.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that, at this point, I would say get an NVIDIA Shield. If I were to say get one box, it'll do most of what you want. It's a very high-quality device. They've got a very good processor in it. It does gaming. It even does GeForce Now, which allows you to play high-end games streaming. But again, you're going to want to get at least 15. I would say get 20 megabits down at least, and consider that in the overall cost.
Okay.
All right.
Perfect. Thank
Enjoy.
You.
I think you're going to be far happier than with a satellite connection. It's certainly going to save you money off that $150. Leo Laporte. Oh, Chromecast is built into the NVIDIA Shield too, which is really nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Matthew on the line from Grinnell, Iowa. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a nice day out where I'm at. Is it nice where you're at?
Yeah. Well, it's a little rainy, but otherwise, yeah. Spring is here, right?
Yeah.
I hope it's come. I hope spring's come to Iowa.
Me too. Yeah. My question concerns my cable provider, MediaCom, has introduced a 1 gigabit internet
nice.
In our area.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a 1 gigabit down, 50 megabits upstream.
Fantastic. How much?
Well, that's the thing. I believe it's about $139.
That's expensive. But, boy, gigabit's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and my question was, I'm considering getting it, and I'd like to know a firewall, a router to support that kind of speed, because obviously what I have now is probably not going to, cut the mustard. I currently have an Asus AC68U.
Yeah.
And we're just looking for something a little more beefier so I can get the full, 1 gigabit.
I hadn't really thought about that because you're right. You're getting so much throughput. I mean, most of the new routers have gigabit Ethernet ports. But can they support sustained the gigabit throughput? That's a very good question.
Right.
And I don't know, because, the fastest connection I have in my house is a couple of 100 megabits.
Mm-hmm. I just know with, cable companies and, of course, Google Fiber offering, one gigabit connections, where does that leave people like me who, are heavy, heavy internet users? Where does that leave us as we kind of...
Yeah, that's a really interesting... I really hadn't thought about this. You're not... The gigabit is more because you're going to have multiple devices streaming from that gigabit thing. I mean, you're not going to... You don't need a gigabit to Netflix particularly.
No. It's just I currently have about 7 devices in my...
Right.
Apartment that are basically constantly using the internet as well as what I do.
You sound like a good candidate to build your own. You can do that with your own box. You can buy boxes that are based for on the PFSense firewall. This is what Steve Gibson, our security guy, does. And so you can make sure that you have gigabit throughput. You could have multiple channels in that box, any old beige box. Hardware cost will be a little more than going out and, say, buying a top-of-the-line ASUS router, but not a lot more. And you're getting a lot more in terms of the firewall capability.
And that's something that I was, you know.
All routers are firewalls, but they have, it's a mixed bag as to what kind of capabilities they have. They all do, you know, the basic firewall stuff, which is reject incoming packets that don't make sense, that aren't requested. They'll just bounce them. And almost all good routers these days will do it in a stealth mode where they don't respond. They don't say, I'm closed. They just say, nothing, right?
Right. Yep.
And one might say, well, gosh, if a router has a gigabit Ethernet port on it, surely it can handle a gigabit, but I don't know if that's a given. Remember, router hardware is pretty cheap. Computers, the processor, the bandwidth. I think you probably, you're asking a really good question, which is, what's a good router? I would guess any router over a couple of $100 is going to be a good choice. My friend Robert loves the Synology router. I happen to use an ASUS AC 5200, which I think is very, very good. I'm sure those higher-end few hundred-dollar routers can handle gigabit inputs no problem.
Right. And that's kind of what I was leaning towards. I wanted to ask your expert opinion on kind of what you thought maybe of the PFSense, because it was actually...
Well, that's certainly the hardcore way to do it. And that gives you full control, but you have to build the box. Or actually, you can buy... There is PFSense hardware, but it's expensive. There are companies... Mm-hmm. In fact, I think... Steve doesn't take, if you have a bunch of computers, so you might have one lying around, you could just put PFSense on. But there are companies that make dedicated, rack mount appliances designed to run PFSense. But those are going to start $500-$700 or more. The good news would be absolutely capable of, routing gigabit traffic. No problem at all.
Yep. And I know there's, I know obviously in order to, I'm not going to get the full, 1 gigabit, over wireless, because that technology.
No. You'll get
there yet.
Right. At best, a couple hundred megabits. But a good wireless router like the PFSense won't give you Wi-Fi. You'll have to buy a wireless router as well. But a good wireless router will give you the full throughput there. That's not a problem.
Yep.
Yeah. If you go to pfsense.org, it's an open source project. They do have a hardware store where you can see a variety of appliances, gateway appliances from a variety of manufacturers. Those are nice because they come with pfsense pre-installed. They're expensive, but then you are getting the best, a full, bank quality firewall system.
Yeah.
Other than that, I like the ASUS AC 5200, I think, is the one I have. That's very good.
Okay.
They look the ones look like spiders.
Oh, yeah.
And then that way you get a router, a firewall, and a Wi-Fi access point all for a few hundred dollars, which might be a more practical way to do it. It just depends on if you've got seven computers, you're clearly in for a penny, in for a pound here. You're all in on computing, right?
So. Yeah, and that's the thing. That's actually what I went to school for. That's what I do for my work. I'm a computer technician.
Oh, there you go.
I upload videos at our local church service every week. So
nice.
I need the fast upload.
Upstream will help. Yeah. You'll have the advantage, though, then of learning how PFSense works, how a high-end router works. That's all a good idea, too. So since this is part of your business, I think that sounds like a great choice. Go to the PFSense website, pfsense.org, and you can see all the hardware they have there. But again, if you've got a computer lying around, sounds like you might, easy enough to put PFSense on a box of your own. You'll then have to go out and get a couple of gigabit Ethernet cards. You can get a Wi-Fi access point as well. There's lots of choices out there. This is more fun. A lot more work, but it's a lot more fun. It sounds like it's right up your alley. Nice to talk to you, Matthew. Wonderful. Sounds like you're doing great stuff. And, man, you're lucky to have that kind of internet access. Very few places you can get gigabit. Although, thanks to Google and Fios from Verizon, we're seeing more and more of those It's a nice thing to have. We happen to be very lucky here. We have 20 gigabits into the studio. No, what? You can't even use it. We're just, you know, chopping it up into little pieces because nobody can use it. No computer could do better than a gigabit. But we like our internet service provider. They've done a very nice job for us. Thank you, SonicNet. They offer gigabit in some areas of Northern California for $40 a month. $40 a month. That's now you're talking. As I mentioned, we have a website. Great place to go for more information. I put links there. I put answers to questions. You can put your comments as well. There's no charge to use it. You don't have to sign up. The only time we want you to sign up is if you're going to leave a comment, and that's just to eliminate spam. We don't do anything with those email addresses. The website is at techguylabs.com. No charge. Techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the giz whiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 88. Ask Leo. Hey, look who's here. Mad Magazine.
Who?
Santa Claus. No. Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's the Giz Whiz. He joins us every week, and I don't see. Did you yesterday celebrate St. Patrick's Day? I hear it's a big thing in San Francisco.
Oh, in New York.
New York. You're in New York. What am I saying?
Yes,
New
exactly.
York. Wherever you are. Yes.
Wherever I am.
Wherever it is you
live. I just celebrated it with a few friends down at the marina. Had a little get-together.
But don't they paint like a green line down Fifth Avenue?
I don't know if they still do it, but for years they painted a green line down Fifth Avenue.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I went down there, but I didn't see any of my favorite balloons. So maybe it was...
No Mickey Mouse balloon?
No.
All right.
I was at the wrong parade.
Yes. So usually Dick joins us. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him the Gizwiz because he's also fanatic about gizmos, and he usually brings us something fun.
Yes. Also, I am a fanatic. I don't know. Do you have low sales resistance?
Low sales? Oh, LSR? Yes.
Yes.
Like I suffer from LSR. Yes.
Right. The deal of the day. I get sucked into more deals of the day.
Do you do Woot still? Is Woot still around?
You know what? Woot is still around, but Woot now evidently does some of it through Amazon.
I think they were acquired, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Because Monday, it said Amazon Woot, a white noise machine. Now, I like white noise machines. I actually sleep with one every night.
That's the thing that goes...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what?
And it covers up. Does it cover up? So you're in Manhattan. You're in the big city. Does it cover up street noise and honking?
Absolutely.
And, really?
Right.
Okay.
You hear?
Oh yeah.
All right. So this is a deluxe one, Leo. This one has 20.
All kinds of. It's got white, pink, purple, all kinds of noises.
Yes, exactly. Multicolor. Right. So I bought. I like it a lot. But then I was trying to check the next day to make sure. It was $60, but deal of the day was $35. And just for laughs, the next day I thought, I'm just going to make sure it went back to $60. So I went there. The company that they makes it is called Electrofan. And when I went back, it had indeed gone back to $60. But I realized for the normal price, for the sale price of $35, they have much more useful white noise machines. The one I have comes with every kind of adapter for overseas travel.
Nice.
So you might need that. But if you don't need that, they have a white noise sound machine. It just has 10 white noise effects, which is plenty.
How do you live with only 10?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But Leo, it also has Bluetooth.
Oh.
And a built-in battery.
Oh.
So as you travel, you can use it in the hotel room to stream your music. Or if you have a really a dreadful speaker in your laptop, you can send the sound from whatever movie or TV show you're watching to this little guy. You still have the 10 white noise effects. And it also has a built-in battery. so that you can take it and use it as a Bluetooth speaker at the beach or whatever. And it's also just $35. So it's Electrofan.
Is it the Junior?
No, the Junior. The Junior Leo has 10 sound, 10 white noise effects and nursery rhymes.
Oh, I don't want that one.
No, you don't want that one. You want the Electrofan Micro.
Micro
with built-in battery and Bluetooth. And one of them, I forget which one it is. It might be the Micro. It says 9 white noise effects and 1 ocean. and I'm thinking... Wait a minute.
Oh, it's 9 plus 1. That's good.
Yes, it's 9 plus 1 ocean. And I'm thinking now, how do I choose the ocean? Because I want the Atlantic. And I figure, I guess they'll look at the shipping label and they go, a Leo in Petaluma is ordering
I'll get the Pacific.
It.
I have to
send
Pacific.
Him the Pacific Ocean. But
that's, I like it that it's both a Bluetooth speaker and a white noise generator.
Yes, and Leo, the Bluetooth speaker
is
can
it decent
stand
sound?
Up. The one that I have, the sound is really excellent.
Good. Yeah, this one tilts. It tilts up, as you said.
Yes, exactly. And it's a little bit smaller, so I've not heard that one, but I was onto it after hearing the one I have. And the one I have is really nice, the big guy. But if you don't need all the adapters for it, I would go with the little one.
L-E-C-T-R-O, Electrofan.
Fan.
And they claim
it does cover New York City noises.
They claim they have the best white noise generator because it doesn't loop. It's unique. It's generated.
Did you ever buy a cheap machine where it has birds and crickets?
And it just loops, and it's really annoying.
Yes, every 4 seconds.
Yeah.
I go, oh,
no, that's
the crickets
not good.
Coming. The crickets coming.
It comes. That keeps you awake.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
why I get these kind of machines.
I should probably try this. That's good.
It's pretty
Electrofan,
good.
Electrofan, micro wireless sound machine with a twist. $35 on Amazon. Also works as a Bluetooth speaker.
Yes.
So does Dick. All you have to do is pair him with your phone, and then he will open his mouth, and stuff will come out. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Amazing. When you go to a Wi-Fi signals, you'll see a mustache. Just click on that.
Just look for the mustache. Or go to gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. That's where Dick puts all his show notes and lots of other stuff from the many shows he does. If you want to, you can click on World News Now. You can click on the Screensavers, Computer America. But if you want to find the Electrofan or Electro, whatever it is, go to the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy. That's me. Click that button. And all the details about all the products he's mentioned on the show, plus links. While you're there, you can also click that What the Heck Is It contest. Click that button. Identify a close-up of a gizmo or gadget, usually pretty obscure, and identify it correctly. You're in the drawing for 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. Get the best clever wrong answer, 24 possible winners. So play accordingly. Gizwiz.biz. And don't forget his great podcast. He does it with Chad Johnson. New gizmos and gadgets every week at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you next week.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, the same. Okay, right. Bye.
Sherry, Pomona, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
What can I do for you?
Thank you for sharing part of your brain with all of us.
My pleasure.
Calling about battery power pack backup.
Yes.
When you're hiking in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Or there's a disaster, no one even has gas in their car because
yes.
you're not near a car to plug in your cell phone. What will people be able to use that might be rechargeable after an event like after?
So there's two ways to do. There's actually three ways to do that. You can, of course, get one with a solar panel. My experience, though, is that the solar panels are so small that they take days to give you even a little bit of charge. You can also get, a lot of companies sell these crankable batteries that you could add charge to by cranking them. I even have a crankable radio that has a flashlight and battery built into it. It's going to take some wrist power, but those you can, within a few minutes of cranking, and to get enough juice to get a phone to work, get a flashlight to work, or an emergency radio to work. Those are great. I get mine. I think I got mine from C. Crane, but there are a lot of companies that make these emergency radios with a crank. The third way is kind of a weirdo way. But we have these. There's camp stoves that will actually charge your phone. You use them like a regular camp stove. You can build a fire under them and take some of the heat to boil the water, but some of the heat is converted into electricity, which then is stored in a battery. So I will, believe it or not, that exists, and it's a great idea. I think if you're going out in the wilderness, you probably should have one of these three. I would prefer the crank, but the camp stove one's great. We'll put all three in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time. In fact, I think we're going to be reviewing the BioLite on the new screensavers, if not this weekend. I know Nate has it soon. So this is the BioLite, which is hysterical. So it's a camp stove. You burn twigs in it. You can boil water with it, but it will also turn the heat into electricity, $129.95, which you can use as a flashlight or a variety of other things. This is called the BioLite. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. Let me just paste that in. And then let me show you the it was actually, I think, Dick DiBartolo, he's big on disaster, who showed me the crankable radio. Let me see if I Yep. This was some time ago. The micro length. Eton is the one that makes them. Eton radio crank. So let's see what the latest is. But I have one of these in the house. These are emergency radios. They're great. So you crank them, and the wrist power can be used to charge the battery. So, and give you a radio, which is an emergency, another good thing to have, right? So they have a variety of these. This is the Scorpion 2, the Blackout Buddy. That's something a little different. But these are really handy. These are the Etons, E-T-O-N. I like this one. The Weather Alert Digital Radio with Bluetooth. And a crank. And then I don't really recommend the solar panel ones. They just take too long to charge up.